And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this week, we stand at the brink on a number of pending political matters. First of all, there's the debt ceiling. You know, McConnell says the Republicans will not agree to raise the debt ceiling. I want to discuss with you, what is the debt ceiling? Most people don't know what it is. It seems like a totally unimportant matter. It's critically important. We have the infrastructure bill and the voter rights bill. Especially the voter rights bill the Democrats gave in to Manchin. He says, give in to me because I can get 10 Republicans to vote for this thing. They gave in to him. He's got to put up or shut up. He's at the brink of that right now.
Right.
The infrastructure bills in the House and the Senate, the Democrats don't seem to want to go along with Bernie's ideas of how to pay for it. Because they don't want to tax rich people, at least some Democrats, not the Democrats, some Democrats. That's at the brink. It's possible that everything will fall off the cliff. Nothing will get done. It's possible that somehow it'll get pulled out. Right?
Yep. And don't forget, we had the cliff in California that
People took a step back from.
Yes. Yes. So we've got all of those things.
Yeah, let's get into this a bit. Let's talk about the debt ceiling, because you don't raise the debt ceiling. That costs the economy and that costs the American people literally
a lot.
Tens of billions of dollars, because the credit of the country goes crashing down. Because the debt ceiling is not an allowance for new spending. Raising the debt ceiling is paying the invoice for the spending that the Trump administration has already done. This is
right.
Just paying the bill, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's it. It just means that we have the ability to borrow more money to pay for the things that have already been voted on, allocated, and
obligated.
Obligated.
Yeah.
Right. And if the credit worthiness of the United States goes down, then the interest rates go up. And the interest payment on interest is really dead money, because it doesn't achieve anything. It doesn't flow to the people. It doesn't accomplish. It doesn't buy anything. It doesn't pay for any services. It's just money that's really wasted on servicing a debt.
And the thing is that interest rates remain at all-time lows. The plain fact of the matter is borrowing and repaying it at this point is irrelevant almost. The interest plays no role. But if you don't raise the debt ceiling, all of a sudden you're going to discover, wait a minute, now the interest rate really is going to go up, because now lending to America is pretty risky. Because the American Republican Party doesn't like to pay back the invoice that it incurred a year ago.
Well, what they're playing games is they're trying to paint the Democratic Party as being irresponsible and not paying for what it wants. And
but what's really happening is that they're saying the Democrats are irresponsible because they're not paying for what we already bought, we Republicans.
Yeah. It's hard to explain that to the public.
I understand that. That's why I want to keep saying it, because that's what the fact here. There's a big lie going around here, a big lie. The big lie being, we're not talking about future spending. We're talking about paying for what you, Republican administration, have already spent. The debt ceiling always refers to what's already been spent. You're at the brink. You're at the brink of a disaster here.
Yeah, and the credit worthiness. And Mitch McConnell has already come out and said, you're not going to get a single Republican vote. Now, they used to be the party of claim to be the party of fiscal responsibility. In other words, you pay for your bills.
The deadbeat party.
Well, now they're the deadbeat party. But of course, that fits right in with Donald Trump, who never liked to pay his bills either.
And didn't.
Yeah, except the United States can't declare bankruptcy like he did.
That's right. Well, then we have the brink that the Democrats step back from in California, Gavin Newsom's recall election.
Yeah. And, you know, this year there were going to be two tests. This turned out to be the third test of the strength of the Democratic Party. This being that off your election for governor of Virginia and governor of New Jersey. But then the Republicans decided that they were going to perhaps try to unseat Gavin Newsom in California. And for a while, it looked like they might have had a shot at it. They were counting on apathy, and they were counting on people being mad at the governor for that little adventure he took up at that fancy restaurant in Napa Valley, the French Laundry, and for his imposition of mandates for COVID. And as it turned out, they vastly miscalculated. One, the Democrats woke up and they pressed hard on this. Number two, it turns out that on the polling, COVID polled well for Gavin Newsom. The people thought that he had been doing a fairly good job on it, and that the Republican idea, the Republicans put forward a candidate, although there were, I think, dozens of candidates.
I think they had 46 candidates.
Yeah, but there really only were a couple of names in there. There was the former mayor of San Diego. There was another person. And then this guy, Larry Elder, who's a radio personality, an African-American, who likes to tell white people what they like to hear about black people. And he, he came out, and the Trumpists rallied around him. And the more they rallied around him, the better Gavin Newsom did. He came out and said there should be no minimum wage. He came out and, would not do anything on COVID. He came out, they found an old radio show of his where he said that if you want to talk about reparations for blacks, really the white slaveholders were owed reparations because they lost their property. Apparently, he doesn't know the distinction between people and property, or doesn't think, or he thinks the people, like the Dred Scott decision, could be property.
This is a guy that made Rush Limbaugh look sensible.
That's pretty hard to do. But yeah,
he did it. He achieved it.
Yeah, he achieved it, and what it wound up being was a monumental waste of money. For
$300 million, nearly, right?
Yeah, and. I just want to reiterate a point. Back a little over 100 years ago in California, the legislature was pretty corrupt. And it was in the moneyed interests, the people who owned the railroads and the banks out there. And they came up with these two reforms. One was called referendum and one was called recall. And so that the people could try to get around the legislature. And what's happened over the last 30 or 40 years is the bad guys have learned how to fix these things in their favor. You had Howard Jarvis, who passed a referendum that froze taxes in California on the theory that if you can't tax people, the government can't do anything or spend any money. And it really hampered California for a while till the Democrats were finally able to overcome that. It required like a two-thirds vote in the legislature in order to raise taxes. And then, now they're using recall. It's the only way Republicans can get elected to statewide office there right now. And they used it successfully against Gray Davis, and they tried it again, and it just didn't work this time.
Gray Davis was a Democratic governor.
Yeah, and he wasn't a bad governor. He just wasn't a very charismatic figure. And
he was great.
He was great. It was a good name for him. And the quirk in the California law is that it's a two-part vote. One, you vote yes or no on the recall. And if the recall 50% or more gets to the yes, then in the same ballot, you vote for somebody to replace him. And in that election, they had a really good candidate. They had Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Republicans did. And, everybody who wanted to be governor then had a stake in voting yes to oust the current governor. You know, ideally what should happen is if the governor can't serve, it should go to the lieutenant governor, but not in California. And then they had this, the quirk is that somebody, if you have 40-some candidates, somebody with 20% of the vote could wind up being the governor.
Right, so the sitting governor, who gets, let's say, 49.9% of the vote, he gets thrown out, and some guy who gets, 10%, 15%,
right,
he gets voted in.
Right. But so,
wouldn't that be an unconstitutional election?
Well, that had never been challenged before, but there was a lawsuit on that, which became moot now because the governor didn't get thrown out.
Yeah.
So
he was at the brink. He was at the brink.
At the brink. And we still have other, other things that have been, that you mentioned that are.
By the way, speaking of when we were talking about the Republicans' refusal so far to raise the debt ceiling and pay for what they have already spent, you notice that Senator Hawley has put a hold on all the administration's appointments for the State Department and for the Defense Department. No ambassadors, no people to run the Pentagon, none, until the Joint Chiefs of Staff chairman quits. He has to resign because the book that is going to be published next week about Trump's last days, written by Woodward and Costas, revealed that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff made sure that the top commanders knew that Trump could not declare nuclear war without him countersigning it. And if an order came through declaring an attack on any country that did not bear Milley's signature, that had not gone through a lawful process and should not be carried out. And because that is exactly what Milley did, he said he did it, Hawley says there should be no appointments to the State Department or the Defense Department. The government's foreign affairs and military affairs should be shut down until this guy is forced to resign. How about that? At the brink.
It's at the brink. You know, Josh Hawley, is a disgrace. He was one of the instigators.
By the way, when he puts a hold on it, it's a hold, right? I mean,
yeah, any senator can have a hold. Anyway. Rand Paul, that's a Rand Paul type trick. It's something in the Senate that has become dysfunctional. It's one of these Senate rules. It's become dysfunctional under Republicans who are just there to really, really bollocks things up. They really don't want to do anything for the people. They just want to stop things from being done. But when you've got an administration that, when you've got a State Department and a Defense Department that need people in to run, those are pretty serious areas.
They used to say the politics stops at the water's edge, but not for these Republicans.
Not for these Republicans. You got to wonder how all these guys that came out of Harvard and Yale, Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, Tom Cotton, Ben Sasse, and J.D. Vance now, the stuff that comes out of their mouths and the policies that they're trying to do or put in there, you wonder what kind of failure of education has occurred.
Well, it's a failure of ethics. These people have ethics that tell them to serve the interests of the wrong group of people. And the ethics of the people and the group of people that they want to serve can only be served at the expense of everybody in the country.
Right. You know, that's a good point, you know, and there's a, you know, talk about ethics, there's a problem trying to pass a bill that prevents people in Congress, both houses, from owning stocks or to voting on things that they on stocks that they own. And they can't even seem to get that through.
Or buying stocks in companies that they help regulate.
Right, right. Or having, or close family members do that.
Yeah, of course.
That was one of the problems.
And Sonny Perdue.
Yeah, well, yeah. And the other lady, a senator from Georgia who got defeated.
Right.
Yeah. So we have those things. But we got a bunch of other bills that are on the, you know, on the edge. The Democrats finally got together and put together a fairly decent voter rights bill. Remember, there were two bills.
The John Lewis bill, right?
Yeah, and the other bill. And, you know, Joe Manchin indicated he would not go for it for them. And without his vote, they couldn't do anything. But he put together something that was generally acceptable. It was a big improvement. And they have to stop some of these, the things that the Republicans are doing on the state level. And so now it's up to him to get 10 Republican votes. And I don't see where he gets any Republican votes. You know, the voting rights bill, the last time it went through the Senate, or it went through something like 98-0.
Right. But that was before the Republicans decided that they were going to subvert elections.
Right.
And they're doing it state by state. And so the key to their strategy is that there can't be any federal legislation regulating elections. It has to be in the hands of the states, because it's in the states where they can pick off 25, 27, 30 different states whose elections they can be in charge of administering, and they can really rig. So yeah. It really doesn't matter what Manchin wants or what the voting rights bill says. It's any voting rights bill, any federal law, is contrary to their strategy, and they're going to vote it down. You can't have a Trump-led Republican Party that allows for federal supervision of elections.
Right. You know, right now in Pennsylvania, they're trying to follow the Arizona model. Of course, in Arizona,
you
they
mean
still
a
don't
non-ending
have
non-ending audit.
They have the non-ending audit that they can't get the that they're in violation of a court order to produce. You know, their data. I think it's a court order, but they're supposed to produce their data. And
Producing a report?
The guy has the claim that the guy who has it has COVID and this or that or the other thing. But in Pennsylvania,
I think what they don't want to admit is that the dog ate the report.
Yeah, or the panda ate the report because it's bamboo paper.
Yes.
But there, you know, in Pennsylvania, we had the Mastriano wanting to do it, and he was such an incompetent that Jake Corman, the Senate leader, took him off the case, handed it to someone else, and now what they've done is they've decided to subpoena the election information of every single voter in the state in all 67 counties. They want data, including social security numbers and driver's licenses.
To do
what? The last
four digits. What? To check what?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
And to turn it over to whom? Because some of these Republican people, when they get hold of classified information, put it up on the internet.
Yeah. They're really handing the Democrats in Pennsylvania an issue. But they're so caught up in this stuff, they can't get out of it. But this is the Trump plan. What he wants to do is have every single state that, like Georgia, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Michigan, where he lost, he wants every single state Republican legislature to declare that the elections were fraudulent in their states, and therefore he claims that he should be the rightful president. You know, we've been through this dance before, that he was. You know, after the election, after Election Day, that he was going to be declared the winner by the Electoral College. Then he was going to be declared the winner on January 6th. And by the way, we have new information on that about Mike Pence on January 6th and how he was trying to get out of having to declare Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as the winners. He was looking for any legal reasoning, and he couldn't find one. In desperation, he called the former vice president of the United States from the state of Indiana, who had also lost an election after one term, and said to Dan Quayle, you know, isn't there any way I can get around doing my constitutional duty? And to his credit, Dan Quayle said, no, you've got no choice. Zero zilch, I think was his wording. And they, you know, and, you know, there's some interesting language in there, according to the book by Bob Woodward, where Pence said, Dan, you have no idea what I'm up against. And Quayle said, I certainly do have an idea. I was in the same position. And, you just don't have a choice. And, you know, he basically said that, you know, Trump is going to be mad at me. like that. Well, of course, they were mad enough. Trump's followers were mad enough that they were looking to hang Mike Pence.
Well, Trump did say, if you don't do this, I won't be your friend anymore.
It won't be your friend. That was it. Some friend. Yeah. Do you promise not to be my friend?
Won't be your friend anymore. How's that for a constitutional argument?
Yeah, that sort of thing. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing that's going on in Pennsylvania. And why
by the way, and so we had a meeting in Susquehanna County this week. In which the Election Commission, which is the group that's responsible for running the elections, was a public meeting, and they addressed the public meeting to discuss the forthcoming election and how it will be run and details about it. The Republican chairperson of the Election Commission said, and I heard him say this, said the 2020 elections in Susquehanna County were the best, cleanest, fairest, most competently run in the history of Susquehanna County. Now, he may not be right about the entire history of the Susquehanna County electoral history, but the point he made was there were no hanky-panky here. And this is a county that voted 2-1 for Trump.
Yeah. If he said there's hanky-panky.
Yeah.
That's the conundrum. We voted for Trump. How can we say it was bad?
Yeah.
But, and that's, the state Senate ought to be worried about other things. This week we found out that the Pennsylvania Turnpike, which generates a lot of toll money, has a big problem. They they use that toll money for places like Susquehanna County, where some of the towns don't have police forces. And
we don't have a police force in the whole county.
The state police are the police force.
Yeah.
And what they do is they take money out of the turnpike funds to pay for state police so that local municipalities don't have to pay.
Right.
And, the Pennsylvania Turnpike has gone to a position where they did away with all their toll takers. And they basically went to Easy Pass. And if you don't have Easy Pass, you pass through and they're supposed to take a picture of your license plate and send you a bill. Well, it turns out that they've found out that over the last year or so, 11 million bills went unpaid for over $100 million. And they've basically got no way to collect on it. Some of these, they don't have good pictures. They don't know what it is. Some of the mail that they send out to people is being returned as the person's not there. They don't have good addresses. And if they find people, what do they do? They have no way of collecting this money.
Meanwhile, they've spent a lot of money in tearing down the toll bridges and the toll booths.
Well, they've taken away. Yeah, they've rearranged the toll booths so that there's no toll takers in them.
Yeah. And they got laid off. They all lost their jobs.
They lost their jobs. So it would be better if they spent their money doing that or their time doing that.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
The Democrats, by the way, fell on their own sword the other day when three Democrats voted with all the Republicans against allowing Medicare to bargain over drug prices and thereby reducing the exorbitant cost of drugs.
Yeah,
what's that all about?
Well, it's about...
That's at the brink of losing an election.
Yeah.
Talk about 2022. You want to lose an election, figure out a way to keep drug prices high.
Yeah. And, you know, and the thing is, that polls well for everybody. It polls well with Democrats, with independents and Republicans. And in fact, Trump ran on that. He wanted to do, you know, lower drug prices.
The only one who doesn't want to lower drug prices is this fellow Shkreli, who raised the $100 item to $6,000 when he bought a drug company. Remember?
Or Joe Manchin's daughter.
Joe Manchin's daughter, exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, but we have to be careful here, okay? You mentioned three Democrats. You wouldn't need three Democrats if there were any Republicans that were willing to do this.
But there aren't. So don't the Democrats have a responsibility?
Yeah, they have a responsibility, but what they should be pointing out is not a single Republican voted to lower your drug prices.
No, but we know that they're evil people. We know these Republicans are evil people.
But the Democrats have to tell the people that. Instead of taking the heat for these three Democrats, they should be taking the heat for the 200 and some Republicans.
They should. There's no question about it. But why? Why did these three Democrats vote the way they voted? I mean, what's
they
that
get a lot
about?
Of, they, because among them, they get well over $1 million in donations from the lobbyists of the drug industry.
So that's not so much at the brink as at the cash register.
At the cash. Well, yeah, what else is new?
Yeah,
what else?
Right. That was really shocking. That was really shocking.
Yeah.
Here, most Democrats are talking about healthcare as a right, of extending the coverage so that poor people can get what they need. And here we have a situation where a group of Democrats join with all these rotten Republicans to make sure that drug prices can't get lowered. Why? Because if the drug companies don't make the super profits that they're used to making, what will they do? They'll go to the moon? They'll go out of business? What will they do? They won't invent vaccines that the government pays them to invent? They didn't even risk a nickel of their own?
You know,
I don't get it. I mean, the corruption is so naked.
Right. But the Democrats have to continually to put things out there to say that, for instance, the
Pelosi
child
should really have made a statement condemning the Democrats and the Republicans who voted against that.
Yeah. You know, like the child tax credit, not a single Republican voted for it. The Democrats should be putting that stuff out there.
They should be. That's right.
They should be putting that stuff out there. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court, we've had two justices say, you know, people shouldn't think that we're political. We're non-political.
Yeah, what's that all about? All of a sudden, they woke up. And this was Amy Coney Barrett and Clarence Thomas. What's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, Amy Coney Barrett shouldn't be on that court because under the McConnell rule that you don't put anybody on, you know, before an election. You just wonder, she'd be better off saying nothing about this.
I know.
Clarence Thomas is one of the more political persons on there. You know, he's got his own theories.
I mean, his wife is a paid political operative.
Just
she
working
is
the White
a
House.
Political operative on cases that come before him. He doesn't recuse himself.
And that's another thing that the Congress should be doing is an ethics bill for the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court has none. Only the lower courts have ethics bills.
Oh, I thought you said the Supreme Court has no ethics. I didn't get the sentence.
They have no ethic rules that apply to them. Oh. And, you know, and Congress still needs ethics rules about owning stock. And again, they can't get that through Congress. Congressmen and senators shouldn't be voting on stock that they own or that they should have to put it in a blind trust.
And if you want to hear something along the same lines, the guy used to be Antonin Scalia's law clerk who designed the Texas anti-abortion law, arguing in Mississippi's favor. Their law is even more restrictive and reactionary than the Texas law, said getting rid of Roe will not impede women. Women can still control their sexuality by not engaging in sex. How's that for freedom?
Well, you know, the folks, the Republicans who keep saying that on masks and on vaccines, people should be able to control their bodies and then vote against women having control of their bodies.
Yeah. Well, if you hate women, you have to vote in control of women.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for this week. We are almost over the brink. We're over the time.
Yeah. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.